All right, La Liga today. We have Real Madrid hosting Rayo Vallecano. Kickoff at 1:25 Eastern on ESPN2 on ESPN Deportes, with coverage beginning at 1 Eastern on ESPN+. Meanwhile, you need to hear this. My new guy, Aaron Rodgers, asked about his adjustment to his new home in New Jersey.
I was walking out to practice today, and we, you know, the media are here always doing little videos and different things, and the video was some do your best Jersey Shore impression, and I just kind of laughed to it. And then CJ Uzama was walking next to me, and he said, "Never watched the show." I said, "Well, how can you not watch the show? Well, the greatest show is back when MTV actually, you know, have content on it. It's phenomenal."
So there you go. He is a big fan of Jersey Shore. You strike me as someone who would have enjoyed the Jersey
Why?
Shore. I don't know. You just seem like you would be the. You know who knows everything there is to know about Jersey Shore?
Who?
Dan Graziano. Put the picture
up. Well, no way.
This is Dan Graziano.
Oh, oh yeah, that's, yeah.
There he is.
So that's me and Mike, the situation. I was interviewing him at the Super Bowl. This is 12 years ago, Super Bowl in Dallas, which Aaron Rodgers won, by the way. How about that?
The symmetry of this is so good.
He was right at the peak there of his popularity, and you know, he hadn't.
You used the word symmetry. This morning, Rodgers used the word synchronicity.
Yes.
Yeah. What are we doing?
What, meaning what?
Expanding. I have no idea. Just say things are similar or the same.
Okay.
You get it, right?
Serendipity.
Fair
enough.
I get it.
One way or another, with that, we welcome you to hour number two of Get Up Live from the Seaport. We are brought to you by Chase. We are rolling along. We got plenty of football to get to, but it begins with the game of the night last night in Miami, South Florida. Jimmy Butler brought brooms with him. Jason Tatum and the Celtics had other ideas. We're in the third quarter, and Miami is showing you the resiliency. They're blocked. They don't care. It's a 9-point Heat lead, and this is exactly where the Celtics have folded. But on this night, J.J. Redick, the Celtics went the other way.
They showed some resiliency here, going on an 18-0 run, getting it done defensively, and then offensively making threes, four threes in that stretch on this 18-0 run.
You saw Tatum with the bucket. He had 34. There's Jaylen Brown, as you mentioned, turning the defense into offense. Here's more from Tatum, Allen Hahn.
And Jason Tatum really had it going. Marcus Smart knocking down the three. Three-point shots were big in this game as the Celtics hit 40%. Previous three games, they were at 23% from downtown in the series.
Jimmy Butler would not let the Heat go easily last night. That's a tough bucket to cut it to four. Jimmy would score 29. But the Celtics, this time, J.J., they had answers for every question.
They absolutely did, and a lot of this starts with Jason Tatum, who had a big second half, hadn't made a field goal going into this game in the fourth quarter. This was a big moment, 88-83 against the zone. From that moment on, it was all Boston.
That was actually his first basket in the fourth quarter of any game in this series, and then once more turning defense into offense. Boston pulls away and wins it big, 116-99 the final. There will be a game five. Jaylen Brown, how do we feel?
You see teams with their back against the wall, and you see they just collapse. You didn't see that tonight. You've seen us come together. You've seen us play defense. You've seen us make the right plays. And I feel like that shows a lot about our character.
Jimmy, it's only one loss, obviously, but is there any concern on your part that this could start to build momentum on the Boston side of things?
No. If anything, it'll build momentum for us, knowing that we have to play with a lot more energy. And, you know, we got to play like our backs are against the wall.
But what happened was the Celtics finally played like their backs were against the wall. And in the second half, last night, they just turned it around. You see the numbers, down six. At one point, it was a 9-point deficit. And then they started shooting the ball. And to J.J.'s point, they finally started knocking down threes. And there you go. So we've got Allen here, and we've got J.J. here, and we got Zach Lowe there. Zach jumps in with us here. And, Zach, my only question to you is, do you have your flights and hotels prepared for Boston next week? Because next Thursday night, game one of the NBA Finals will be played in Boston after the Celtics engineer the first ever Love 3 comeback in NBA postseason history. What do you think of that, Zach Lowe?
Well, I want to be clear. Are you calling it right now, Greeny? Are you calling your shot right now?
I'm calling it right now. I'm Babe Ruth. I'm pointing at the stands, and I'm telling you right now, the Celtics, I said it yesterday before the game, that the Celtics were going to win that game and begin a run. The Celtics, nothing that has happened in this series has made sense to me. I don't mean that to be interpreted as though I think Miami is a bad team. They're not. They're a terrific team. They're brilliantly coached, and Jimmy Butler in the playoffs is one of the five best players in the NBA. But the Celtics have another one of those five best players in the NBA, and every other part of their team should be better. They have had circles coached around them, and they've played like they just didn't care. The bottom line of it is, those should be things that can change, and I feel like they're about to. I think the Celtics have a really good chance to do this, Zach. Yes, I do.
Well, so here's the thing. Number one, I think our group of top five NBA players is expanding to include like 9 or 10 guys. We've actually got a pick of five and say these are the top five. I said last week, on paper, without having done all the research, Boston has to be the team with the best chance in the history of the sport at coming back from 0-3. They're the number one seed, best point differential in the league, playing an 8 seed, and they have home court advantage. They win game 5 tomorrow in Boston. Game 6 becomes a major pressure cooker for Miami. Now, look, I'm not going to pretend I thought when they were down 3-0 and they just laid down in game 3 that I thought that was a realistic possibility. The Heat are still heavy favorites. I'm just saying, if you didn't watch game 3 and see how ugly it was, you would look at the paper resumes of these two teams and say, hey, look, 0-150. If someone's going to give it a run on paper, this would be the team. And that team finally showed up and made some shots and got the ball moving around last night. Game 5 is going to be interesting. And if they get that one, woo, it's sweat time in Miami.
Yeah, and not just because of the humidity. So, JJ, let me come to you on that thought. Was there an adjustment that you saw? The second half, we just put the numbers up there. It was a completely different story than we had seen in the first three games of this series. Outside of the obvious, which is that they played with some desperation and that some shots finally fell. Were there adjustments? Was there something you saw that they actually did differently?
Well, some of this is just three-point shooting. They made threes last night. But I actually, defensively, I liked what they did with the shooters, Max Strus, Duncan Robinson. They allowed their guys, Derek White, to just chase over the top. They didn't bring the big up. We've seen time and time again, Bam Adebayo getting that pocket pass, making dunks, making passes to the corner for three. 6 blocks in the second half last night for the Boston Celtics, forced turnovers. That allowed them to get out in transition and not go against the Miami Heat set half-court defense.
What'd you see, Alan?
Yeah, missing shots was a huge part of this, not to make it simple, but also the points off turnovers. 27 points off turnovers, and they got in transition just like JJ said. I mean, that really was a big part of this, is they started making shots. And as look, Miami Heat have played great, and you want to give them all the credit in the world for how hard they have played, how tough they have played. They've made shots, all the things that, in this run. But eventually, they've got to turn back into a pumpkin. Eventually, they've got to be who they are, and you're waiting for it to happen. You waited for it. The first round against the Bucks caught your attention. The Knicks series was a battle. I mean, the point differential in that series was under 4 points per game. So that was a tight game. It could have gone to 7. This series makes no sense at all. And so that's why if you're in Boston, you have to have that thought of, if we just get right, like, Miami should not be the team going to the finals. They shouldn't be. They can earn it if you leave the door open. But they shouldn't be that team. And by the way, you mentioned Babe Ruth. You made a reference there. Did you know what you just did there?
What was his line?
Well, you make a Babe Ruth reference, Curse of the Bambino.
Yes.
Okay, he was traded from the Red Sox to the Yankees.
Of course.
And the curse was lifted in 2004 when the Red Sox came back from an 0-3 deficit for the first time.
Correct.
In baseball history.
Kevin Millar, here it is.
Yeah, don't let us win one game, Kevin Millar said. And that turned into one of the biggest or the greatest turnaround in baseball history as a team came back from 0-3. In Boston, in NBA playoff history, it says this can't happen. But in Boston sports history, it says it can.
Right. They did it. And what can only be described as a coincidence or some sort of karmic irony, A-Rod and Derek Jeter were both at the game last night, and they were part of that Yankee team that had that 3-0 lead taken from them. So, Zach Lowe, I guess I would ask you, the Celtics, the inexplicable inconsistency, the fact that some nights they look like what they feel like they should be, what I guess I'm trying to say they should be, which is the best team in the NBA. The Celtics should be the best team in the NBA. Why is it that so many nights they just are a no-show? What does it tell us, and what does it portend about their chances of doing it three more times in a row?
Well, maybe they're just not going to ever be the team we think they should be. Maybe this is just the team that they are, which is a really good team that can win the championship, but within games, let alone within series, has periods where they dial in and play their A game on both ends of the floor, and then a 3 or 4 minute period where they stop passing, where they make uncharacteristic defensive mistakes. You want to ask me why that is? I don't really have a great answer for that, except on offense, I do think part of it is that neither Tatum nor Brown is a really good playmaker for his position. And they have the ball in their hands all the time. Tatum's a good playmaker, but he's a 4 or 5 assist game kind of guy. He's not an 8, 9, 10 assist kind of guy. Jaylen Brown has an even, sometimes negative assist to turnover ratio every game, every playoffs. I think that's just going to breed inconsistency. And I think one of the reasons they found a little pop last night was those guys started getting off the ball a little earlier, hitting their teammates on the wing, starting to ignite some simpler swing sequences where one passer doesn't have to do all the work. But if there's one reason they're inconsistent, I would point to that. But this is just who they are. And to your point, Allen, Greeny, yes, on paper, the Celtics are better. On paper, they have a chance to pull off this Kevin Millar, Babe Ruth, whatever comeback. But this is why games 1 and 2 are so damaging when you gag those games away or let the Heat steal them from you. Your margin for error now is nothing. One Max Strus 7 3-point game, you're out. And that's what's so difficult and why these have not happened yet.
Let me show you what Vegas thinks here. We can put up our friends at Caesars Sportsbook, give us the possibilities of this year. Oh, actually, this is from our basketball power index, which I know people have been paying a lot of attention to throughout this series, where it began and all that. What that's telling you, they have almost a 50-50 chance of winning 3 straight here. What they're telling you is that the analytics say, and you like analytics, JJ, and I appreciate that about you. You know, a lot of former players will poo-poo this stuff. The reality is they're a better team. I'm not knocking Miami. They're a magnificent story. Their coach is elite. Jimmy Butler in the playoffs is elite. Bam Adebayo is a wonderful piece, and they get unbelievable contribution from players who wouldn't even be in the rotation on most good teams in the NBA. But the reality is the Celtics are the better team. And I don't think that that 46% number feels completely out of touch with the reality of the situation.
Yeah, I do like analytics. They help to inform. They help to educate. Oftentimes, they reinform the eye test.
Right.
But it's that there's not a 46% chance. It's certainly higher than zero. It's a non-zero chance that the Celtics can come back. They are going to need, here's what they're going to need. They're going to need 3 straight games of shooting above or around 40% from 3 as a team.
Okay.
They're going to need 3 straight games of Tatum elimination games, which is 30 a game, 9 rebounds, 6.5 assists, 44% from 3.
Check.
And they're going to need 3 straight games of containing Jimmy Butler and running the Miami Heat 3-point shooters off the line. If they can do that for 3 straight games, yeah, I could see them stealing maybe 1 in game 6 in Miami. All of a sudden, anything can happen in game 7. But to Zach's point, your margin of error is so slim right now. You are a Max Strus game away. You are a Jimmy Butler 45-piece game away from going home. And I also just don't agree with this notion that they're just this vastly superior team. Miami has been a great basketball team for a number of months. They've come back from 6 double-digit deficits in the second half just in these playoffs. 2 of those in games 1 and 2. We should not be surprised that the Miami Heat are up 3-1.
Well, it is somewhat contrary to what these teams were all year long. I have to leave it there. Every basketball conversation has made me late this morning. I promise we're coming back. We will get back to the LeBron conversation we had earlier today as well. In fact, that is what we'll mention here. Coming up, was it LeBron's last dance? What is his last chance? Does he need more help from the man who was brought in to give it to him? That was a significant debate we had earlier. We'll dive back into it. Plus, no need to panic about Aaron Rodgers' calf, or is there? We'll get to that. And then the squirrel surprise at Yankee Stadium last night. We promised Dan would do a touchscreen. He's gonna do it! We will touchscreen a squirrel at Yankee Stadium if it's the last thing we do. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than 1 rebound or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right, we're back on Get Up. Aaron Rodgers was at OTAs for the Jets yesterday. He was sidelined by a strained calf that everyone promises me was not serious. Meanwhile, he was talking, and I mean waxing rhapsodic, about the start of his new chapter in New York so far.
It's been like a dream month so far. I mean, honestly, every day has been that for me. Every day I wake up excited about coming to the facility, you know, be rocking Jets gear. It's a little bit strange for sure, but every day there's been something that's kind of been a little special sign or synchronicity or just a cool moment that reminds me I'm in the right place.
All right, I wanted Alan Hahn in this conversation quickly because you're a Jet fan like I am. When those tweets started coming across that Rodgers appeared to be injured, what thought went through your mind immediately?
I was in panic mode right away because it's like, oh, here we go. This is the same old Jets. This is what's going to happen. I was live on the air on my radio show while these tweets were happening, reading Diana Rossini, watching her videos, hearing about Alan Lazard going down and walking off. And, oh, yeah, straight panic mode of why does this happen to us? And it's May and it's OTAs, but this is where we are.
But he's fine.
Look, if it's going to happen, May OTAs is when you want it to happen. And no one there I talked to seems concerned. He's still out on the field. He's still helping out. Look, if it was debilitating, he wouldn't be out there walking around, right? So I was
just wrap him in bubble wrap, Dan. Please, just wrap him in bubble
ago
wrap.
As a sports reporter, never underplay an injury, yeah. Right? Because the teams always try to, but I mean, all I can go is the information I've got, and no one there seems worried.
That said, Dan, when you hear the way he's talking, when you see the way he has begun this relationship with New York and
never
and
seen it.
You've never seen
like this version of him.
No.
The version that there's the chip there. There's the I'm offended because I got ran out of Green Bay chip, whether you think he was or wasn't, he was. And then there's the I'm happy, I'm excited, I'm refreshed. We haven't seen, I've never seen that version of Aaron Rodgers together. And that's why I think we're going to get the MVP type of player. I think, like, let's have an honest conversation about the Jets. Not hype, not hyperbole. Where is the known flaw of this football team?
Offensive line.
But Greeny, I could say that about every team in the AFC outside of, like, maybe Kansas City.
Right.
The Dolphins, the same thing. The Cincinnati Bengals, the same thing. The Chargers, and there's every team needs their offensive line to stay healthy. That we know that. That's what I'm saying. If they're healthy and playing to their best, they can beat Kansas City. They can beat Cincinnati. They can beat Buffalo. Buffalo needs to be healthy. So that's why I sit here and go, are they talented enough? Are they well coached enough? Are they deep enough? They have the multiple. Yes. That's why I sit there and I go, this isn't hype. This isn't hyperbole. This is substance that this football team. And I would say this. You can make the case that this is the most talented roster in totality Rodgers has ever had. Maybe that Super Bowl team, but I think this defense is more talented than that defense top to bottom. And that's why there is such real expectation and excitement in New York.
Yeah. I mean, the jury is out on the coaching, but I'm willing to be optimistic about it. I don't think we know what Robert Saleh is as a head coach yet. And Nathaniel Hackett, I think he's a brilliant offensive mind because Rodgers thinks he's a brilliant
offensive mind. I'm a Nathaniel
Hackett
believer.
And he's the reason he's there. All things in Denver didn't go so well for him, but maybe that's a different story.
But he's not the head coach of the Jets. I think it's a big difference.
I'm willing to live in a good place.
But when you talk about offensive lines on all the different – and we know that. That's obviously the biggest concern for every team because of your quarterback. But how many of these teams have a 39-year-old quarterback that isn't as elusive as he once was, that you know at that age, one hit is all it's going to take, and that could just collapse everything, of course.
Well, I don't think he's a 39-year-old quarterback, number one. This guy is one of the rare talents that we've had come in the NFL. And while he's maybe not as physically elusive, his brain is as good as anybody's in the history of the game. So as much – like, these guys are very aware the length of the season – don't hold on to the football. Get it out of your hands. And I said this. This was the difference, Alan. Tom Brady, the Super Bowl year in Tampa to last year. Tom got the ball out of his hands 2-3 years ago when they won the Super Bowl, and they had people to do things with it. They didn't have that last year in Tampa Bay consistently. Right. They have that in New York. So this guy's going to be – Aaron will not hold on to the football and jeopardize his health. He's going to get rid of it, and those young, talented players – are going to do something with it.
Okay, and so now we're going to do something that on the list of all the things you expected to turn on ESPN this morning and watch, I promise you this will be the very last. So we showed you last night at Yankee Stadium, there was a squirrel that not only made its way into the ballpark, but got this kind of close to these young men who will live forever with those looks on their faces at the sight of a squirrel, which, while somewhat off-putting, is hardly a terrifying. This is not like a wolf ran onto the field.
Like, they look like the squirrel had a bomb on its back. Like, exactly. It was ridiculous.
But then he's like,
probably not the wording I would have used. But
Dan, we are going to have Dan Orlovsky, and I think JJ is here. You're going to touch screen the squirrel. No one could do this if Dan Orlovsky can't do it. Take it,
it's my guy. JJ Redick here. So first of all, Greeny, I'm watching First Take yesterday, working out, and all of a sudden I see JJ there, and I'm like, oh, he's going to do a tape, and then I realized it's a touchscreen, so I want to know why he was able to do it first on First Take, Stephen A., not me. But all right, so
it took
JJ
months.
And I
it took months of pleading.
All right,
months
so we're gonna judge a lot of people here, justifiably so. So I was taught as a quarterback, like, make sure when you're gonna go into a fight, you got the right people with you. Yo, my man, right here. What is the issue right now? Don't ever take this dude into a fight with you because he's acting like this is a hippopotamus right here. Like, I want no part of it. Second of all, close your mouth, bub. Close your mouth. Okay, now the second thing, you know, Gen X or whatever. Dude, you don't have to videotape everything, bro. We can move on from a squirrel. JJ, how about this dude? Again, we see, these are the two guys.
The disbelief over a squirrel. Like, we haven't all seen a squirrel before.
These guys are so scared of a squirrel. Don't ever, whoever your friends are, boys, when you get into a fight, do not bring those two into the foxhole. Now, this is when you see wisdom. Look at this, my man right here. My man right here has lived. He's seen a lot. He's like, man, this is cool. I grew up in the streets of New York. I saw fist fights galore. I've seen everything. He's like, this squirrel is absolutely nothing. This guy, I got nothing. I got nothing. He looks like he's scared to death. And then watch the end. Watch the end.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
Going down? That looks like someone trying to grab a rebound in the playoff. Yo, what's happening here? We have extreme emotions on one side, and then the dad and the kid. Are you guys looking at TikTok or something? You guys aren't even paying attention to the reality.
Stick the
That's
landing.
Amazing. Stick the landing.
He's an athlete.
What are our thoughts on these guys' emotions?
I don't know. Here's the thing. I can't pretend that I would look any tougher, cooler, or more unflappable.
Dude, that dude right there, I can't get over.
Squirrel. What's his caption?
I feel like I'd be the old guy.
You'd be the old man
guy.
Right here?
Yeah, I'd be the old
just
guy.
Just taking it in?
You know,
this is so
like,
cool.
Oh, cool, a squirrel on the wall.
All right. That was everything we hoped it would be and more. As we continue, that was well done.
Take it over.
Very well done. Are we ready to bid farewell to the king? You will hear the latest response from the Lakers to LeBron's lament right after this.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Miami Heat, the Boston Celtics, Game 4. And away we go. 13-6 Miami run to end the half. And it's Tatum again with a three. Bullseye!
And you see the confidence starting to build now in the mid and green here.
Boston facing elimination, showing a lot here in this one.
Jason Tatum has put this game away tonight. He has stepped up to get it done.
We've got a game five as the Celtics surge ahead.
All right, so the Celtics with a big bounce back win last night, and they need to get three more if they're going to keep this thing alive. As they go back to Boston for game five, Caesars has them a 7.5-point favorite and massive money line favorite to win tomorrow night and force a game six. So let's dive into that with a game of likely or unlikely. J.J. Redick, if I said the Celtics are going to win tomorrow night to force a game six, would you say that's likely or unlikely?
I'm going to say likely, even though Boston has not been a good home team over the last two postseasons. I expect Jason Tatum to continue his great play in elimination games. I think the supporting cast, Grant Williams, Marcus Smart, Al Horford, all those guys with big game fours, that will continue in game five.
All right, let's go to the West. Zach Lowe, if I said Nikola Jokic and the Nuggets are going to win their first championship, would you say that is likely or unlikely?
Can I know who they're going to play first and whether they'll have home court advantage, which is kind of important? Without knowing that, I will go likely because they've been dominant in the playoffs. They'd be favored over Miami, I believe, with home court, and Boston has been so inconsistent. I'll go likely. Throw a party, Denver.
And to the point that everyone might be wondering, yes, the Celtics would have home court in that series if they got there. Finally, Alan, if I said LeBron has played his last ever game in a conference final, would you say that's likely or unlikely?
I'm going to say likely, not being a hater. It's just what he's doing at this age. It's just that's the part that's unlikely, of course. And for it to continue with the Western Conference, seeing what Phoenix can make and other teams as well, building up, going after them and not knowing what the future holds for them as a roster, unlikely. This might be the last time we have seen him in a conference final.
Well, I'll remind everyone, he was talking about retiring after that game, and he wanted to hear from the Lakers brass about that yesterday. They did address LeBron's comments. Here's what they said.
LeBron has given as much to the game of basketball as anyone who's ever played. And when you do that, you earn a right to decide whether you're going to give more. Obviously, our hope would be that his career continues.
Coming off a tough loss like that, you know, the work we've put in this season, I think I was ready to retire after last night, too.
So I almost want to leave the conversation there. We touched on this briefly. I don't think any of us think that LeBron James is going to retire. I don't have any issue with him speaking in that momentary frustration that Darvin Ham just alluded to. This is a guy who had an injury that would have taken almost every other player out for the season at the end of February. I think he went out on his shield, and if he was expressing the momentary frustration of that, then so be it. The conversation then turned to a really interesting, I think, debate, if you will, about Anthony Davis, his role in all of this, and I guess for lack of a better way of framing it, just how good he actually is. And I wanted to revisit that because what I hope we can have here is the nuanced conversation that I think must be had about Anthony Davis. When one complains about Anthony Davis, one is not saying this guy stinks, because he clearly doesn't stink. He's clearly a very, very good player. But there have been moments in time over the course of time when he was drafted, when and at different moments in New Orleans, and even those that flash that we saw in the bubble, where we said, Anthony Davis is the kind of guy that you can hitch your wagon to and say, ride me to a championship. And what I think has been proven is that he isn't that. And so when we express frustration at that, you keep saying to me, JJ, well, Greeny, that's just not who he is. And I keep saying back to you, I know, and that's kind of the problem. Do you understand the point I'm trying to make?
Yeah, that seems more like a you problem. And I don't mean that in any disrespectful way. No, it's like we're trying to make someone that they're not. Anthony Davis in New Orleans, they got out of the first round one time.
Right.
So the idea that you could ever hitch your wagon to him and you could be a contender, that's just not based in any sort of reality. Look, I think a bunch of things can be true at the same time. Anthony Davis is an all-NBA player, all-defensive type player. I thought he was fantastic throughout the playoffs. His production went up every round. Defensively, he was great. And I can also say Nikola Jokic dominated him. I can say both, because Nikola Jokic is the best player in the world, because the Denver Nuggets are the best team in basketball, because Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray have the best two-man game in basketball. Think about this. Anthony Davis is the primary defender in that series. Jokic was 21 of 37. Now, two of those shots were one-legged, somber shuffle, end of shot clock, fall away, over-the-head three-pointers.
Right.
Like, some of this is just Nikola Jokic's greatness. And his greatness exceeds Anthony Davis's greatness. That all can be true. It's not a knock on Anthony Davis, but the idea that he can be the best player on a championship team, I'm not sure that's ever been based in reality.
Okay, so then that part of it I don't disagree with. Maybe that was never based in reality. So now I can't disagree with that. I'm saying I thought he could be. There was no question in my mind. I remember there was a time when you would ask that, you know, that famous question, Zach, that we always ask. If you could start an NBA team right now, start a franchise with any one player in the world. There was a time when, based on his age and everything else, Anthony Davis was a popular answer to that question. And so that, I guess, is the reason that when he falls short of that, it feels like a disappointment. What would be a great performance for most other people sometimes feels like less than that for him. Is that an unreasonable way to look at it, Zach Lowe?
I've lost track of what the whole AD discourse is at this point, so I don't know what's reasonable and what's not. One thing has changed from the bubble, when Anthony Davis looked like, yeah, maybe he could be that guy, till now. Just one. His jump shot disappeared. For the most part, that's the difference between consistent 25 to 30 every game and the occasional 14, 15, 18, 20 that leaves you feeling a little cold. That's it. Everything else is pretty much the same. And look, Anthony Davis is a big guy. With two exceptions in the entire NBA, Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic, big guys are at least slightly dependent on wings and point guards to get them the ball and put them in position to score. Slightly dependent, not always dependent, but somewhat dependent for their points. Embiid and Jokic just go get it like Hakeem Olajuwon and Shaq back in the day. AD's never been like that. And so when the pick and pop jumper isn't as consistent as it once was, isn't as elite as it was during that run in the bubble, the points are gonna fluctuate a little bit. That's just who he is. Swagoo said yesterday, boy, I've had this conundrum with Anthony Davis for 5 years. And I said to him, if you've had a conundrum for 5 years, maybe it's not a conundrum. Maybe this is just what it is, what he is as a player. And what drives me crazy about this whole discussion is it's just box score points. That's all that drives it. There is no discussion, unless someone like JJ or a nerd like me brings it up, of defense, which is half the game that's going on. And he's been the single most dominant defensive player of these playoffs. The entire Golden State Warriors series was about Anthony Davis. Where is he? Who's he guarding? How can we get him away from the rim? A lot of the Denver series, from Denver's perspective, was about, okay, where's Anthony Davis? Oh, he's on Aaron Gordon. That means he's going to obliterate the rim. How do we counter that? He led the playoffs in rebounding. He led the playoffs in blocks. We just don't talk about these things because I guess they're not sexy or they're not interesting, or we want to get angry when he has 15 points because he shot 5 of 14 and missed some floaters. It's a huge part of the game. It's a huge part of his value. It's a huge part of why LeBron wanted him in Los Angeles, because LeBron understood, as I get older, I'm going to need someone who can single-handedly make us a top 10 defense every season. But we don't want to talk about that. We just want to talk about, why did he score 18 points this game and 40 the previous game?
That's fair. He shot 4 for 15 when they came home in that big game 3. But your points are obviously well taken. So, Alan, what is the right way to characterize what LeBron James' running mate is right now?
Not enough. Clearly. I mean, first of all, Zach, I love you, but he's not Ben Wallace. Like, Ben Wallace was a great defensive player that you didn't expect to have an impact on the offensive side.
You got to stop mentioning Ben Wallace. No one is mentioning Ben Wallace.
You call him a great defensive player. That's what you're talking about now. We're focusing on one side of the game.
Hold on, one at a time. Go ahead.
I said he's a great defensive player who scored 40 points in a conference finals game, 21 points two nights ago, and we're acting like he scored 2. Don't give me the Ben Wallace stuff. No one is mentioning Ben Wallace. You are bringing it up as a straw man that is not a thing.
Okay, because you were saying we're not focusing on the defensive side, so we're just kind of pigeoning home. Now he's just this great defensive impact guy.
No, I said we're not talking about it.
Here's why we're not talking about it. Because he's at a level where that's what we expect. That's his standard, to be a great impact defensive player who is also supposed to help LeBron on the other side as well. So LeBron goes for 31 in the first half. Now you got to take me home because I can't do it for 48 minutes anymore. That's part of it. This was a guy that once all of our ESPN basketball experts had as number 2 in the top 100. This was in the 2020 season. Number 2, LeBron was number 1. You have never had 2 players on the same team, 1 and 2. So our expectations for Anthony Davis are up here. And what we saw him going up against, the best player in the world, is that he didn't match up on the offensive end. He couldn't hold his own enough in this series to get 1 win.
Yeah.
And that's what I saw with my eyes, not the box score.
Go ahead, JJ.
Yeah, I'm going to completely disagree with the not enough comment. 2020, they win the championship. At times, he's the
right
best
now.
Player in the conference finals. Best player in the conference finals. Early in that series against Miami, he was the best player. 2021, they have the quick turnaround. They don't bring back Caruso. They use their mid-level exception on Montrezl Harrell, who was unplayable in the playoffs. Then they make the Russ trade. There's basically 2 seasons of just a misfit roster. They finally put a comparable roster together. They get to the conference finals. He averages 26 and 14. And they lose to the better team, Alan. They lose to the better team.
What was the question? It wasn't about...
You
was
said
he?
He's not enough for LeBron.
The question
and
was
I disagree.
Right now, where LeBron is,
that's
where this team
is. Because Jokic is the best player in the world and Denver's the best team.
So you
what is so
players.
Hard to understand
you
about
have two
that?
Two players
Alan.
That are great, and you still need one more? Now you need one more star? You don't have enough with 2 stars? They have 2 stars.
I
have 2 stars.
I disagree with that entirely.
So they don't need another star?
No, they don't need another star.
That's what we're hearing.
What
that
do
they're
they
now
need?
Looking for another star.
Then let's ask the question. What
they need
do
Jokic.
The Lakers
they
need?
They need Jokic.
No. But if what could LeBron Come and on. Anthony Davis be the 1 and 2 on a team that could win a championship? And if so, what do
the
they need
is
around
right now?
Them?
Last 30 seasons, 4 game sweeps. Tied for the 4th lowest point differential. That series was decided by an average of 6 points per game.
Yeah, they were close 24. Games. They could have won all 4 of them.
They could. And think about this. 3 times, I mentioned the somber shuffle, 3 times Jokic hit one of those. Jamal Murray hit one as well in game 1. Like, this series was dictated on a few shots.
Yeah.
That's the sport.
Yeah.
That's the sport.
So the Lakers are closer than the sweep looks. And they shouldn't really change a
did
lot.
Did you watch? Alan,
so
I know you watched the series. I know
I
you watched the series.
But I'm asking you, though. Yes.
Then the sweeps.
All right, because we come out of a sweep, and now this is talk of, does LeBron want to keep playing? Are they going to get Kyrie? Who's another star they can get? That's what Wendy was talking about. All the discussions about the Lakers are,
the
how do they make this roster better?
The league is
better?
Moving away from the three-star model, and everybody knows that. And if they double down on that like they did with Russ, they're making a mistake.
All right, I have to leave it there in the interest of time. It continues to be a very interesting conversation, as you can see. We'll come back with much more as we go. Up next, we gave Dan this homework assignment. Who are the top five AFC quarterbacks under the most pressure? The names are fascinating. You will hear them coming up, and you will see Dan Graziano going at it here with our research team. Here's the trivia question. We've been talking about quarterbacks under pressure all day. Which quarterback delivered under pressure last year and had the most game-winning drives? Graziano looks confident.
I know it wasn't Anthony Davis from what I hear.
We'll see if he's right.
I rule him out.
Here we go. Graziano showing some real confidence, I thought, when we put the question up on the screen. We're talking about quarterbacks under pressure. So today's question is, which quarterback had the most game-winning drives last season?
It's one of two guys. It's either Daniel Jones or Kirk Cousins. The Minnesota Vikings won 11 one-score games last year, set a league record. So I have to guess Cousins. I think it has to be him.
That's right. That's correct. It is Kirk Cousins.
But apologies to my friend Jeff Saturday.
That is incredible. Yeah. Kirk Cousins, Patrick Mahomes, and Daniel Jones had six each.
Oh, Daniel. Yeah, there you go.
So Jones was right there. You continue to be a machine. Again, with Hembo out on paternity leave, we got Graziano up 2-1 against Team Research. We have to put together an entire department, and he's beating them. So the question is about quarterbacks under pressure. Let's put Orlovsky under the microscope. In our first hour, he gave us the five NFC quarterbacks under the most pressure. We agreed with those picks. Let's see if we agree with the AFC.
All right, we'll start with number five and Lamar Jackson. The reality is they overhauled Baltimore in organizational philosophy. This was a philosophy that led to 45 wins in 5 years, playoffs 4 to 5 seasons, an MVP for their quarterback. Now they are going to go to a more pass-happy offense. This is by far the most talented skill group he's had. Two first-round wide receivers in Baltimore in the last 3 years, plus Odell Beckham Jr., really big deal. There's a lot of pressure for Lamar to take the next step. Tua Tagovailoa. You guys have talked all morning about Anthony Davis and the talent that he is, but can he stay healthy? All that stuff. That's the big question for Tua. This was the number one pass offense in the NFL when Tua played last year. They were the number one offense in the NFL in yards per play, better than Kansas City when Tua played. But he's got to show that that's not a fluke. He's got to show that he can go be healthy. It is a huge season for Tua. Number three, Mac Jones. Kind of who are you, Mac Jones? I love Mac. I think he's a really, really, really good player. Great rookie year, bad last year, and I believe it was because of the coaching. Now Bill O'Brien comes in, his offensive coordinator from Alabama, gives him a great chance to play good football. I would argue that this is a bottom three, bottom four supporting cast in the AFC, so that is set against him.
Yeah.
But year three of his quarterbacking future, it's going to be in New England. The expectations are for him to go play really well.
Right.
Number two, Deshaun Watson. Everyone knows that Deshaun Watson is incredibly talented, and he's got the huge contract. Here's the crazy thing. In the last three or so years, he's got 7 touchdown passes. 7. For that amount of money, I want to see, does Deshaun look like the Deshaun of old, the bouncy, sudden, springy, dynamic athletic talent? Because if he does, Cleveland's a sneaky playoff team in the AFC.
I agree with that.
But it's time to get back to that 2020 Deshaun Watson.
I'm positive I know who number one is going to be.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers, there's no one in the NFL with more pressure on them than Aaron Rodgers. The Jets are a football team that, if you ask anybody, unequivocally, unapologetically, whatever unword, they are super talented. They just need good quarterback play. And Aaron Rodgers is one of these quarterbacks that people love to see fail. People love to hate on. They want to see him not do well. The pressure to, can you go take a really good roster and get him to the playoffs? Can you take a really good roster and go win a Super Bowl? The expectation in the NFL circles, in the city of New York, is that the Jets are a Super Bowl contender. We finally have a guy that can go beat Joe Burrow and Patrick Mahomes. There's no one under more pressure than Aaron.
I actually can't disagree that there is a lot of pressure on him. But there is one name on this list that I think is dramatically missing. Graziano, who is that name?
Who are you going to say?
I'm going to say Russell Wilson.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because I could put Josh Allen on the list for other reasons, too, because of the expectations. There.
Russell Wilson, I think, is playing for his legacy. I think Russell Wilson, who's got the quarterback guru coach now, coming off a disaster of a first year in Denver, he is a player who went to Denver, I think, to elevate his legacy.
Yeah.
Instead, it's gone the other direction.
Yeah.
I think there's enormous pressure on Russell Wilson.
Listen, there's a lot of pressure on Russell Wilson. And when he went there last year, Greeny, I was like, it's not Super Bowl or bust this year, but it's a Super Bowl or bust during his tenure in Denver. And I agree, because of the addition of Sean Payton, the expectations have risen.
And because of how bad, no one would have dreamt it would be as bad as it was last year.
Greeny, if you took Russell Wilson and the Broncos and you put them in the AFC South, I'd be totally on board with you. But because they play in the AFC West and he's got to go through Patrick Mahomes and he's got to go through Justin Herbert, I think that there's a little bit from, at least me, like this grace extended of,
man,
those are two mountains that you got to go through.
Hey, Russell wants to be thought of as an all-time great.
Right.
He's got to show something. He has to show something like that. Like, I can compete with Patrick Mahomes.
I agree. I mean, there's a lot of I don't think there's more pressure on him than these five guys, just strictly because of what's expected from them this season.
The conference is so loaded with quarterback play. We'll see. It's a good list. Orlovsky did his homework today, which might be the first time we've ever said that about him.
Thanks.
Going back to his
Give me the research question.
Hockey last night. Golden Knights and Stars facing off game three. Knights lead the series 2-0. We're just over a minute in, and here's how the scoring would begin. Jack Eichel, watch the spectacular play. Sliding it to Marchessault, who scores his seventh of the postseason. You'll see it again. Eichel with a gorgeous play in the Knights with a 1-0 early lead. Now we're just 30 seconds later. That's a dirty play. That's a dirty play, Danny.
Guys from the squirrel breakdown to get into the
fist Jamie Benn checking Mark Stone and then the cross check in the face. That's a game misconduct. His night was over. Minute left now in the ensuing Golden Knights power play. Same score. Nicholas Waugh looking for Ivan Barbashov, and it is the Golden Knights with a 2-0 early lead, and then they add a minute later, same score. Golden Knights, they create the turnover. They turn defense into offense. William Carrier backhand for the goal as he goes top shelf. 4-0 the win, 3-0 the series. The Golden Knights are on the doorstep, and we will have game four of the Western Conference Final for you Thursday night, 8 Eastern, right here on ESPN and ESPN Plus. Stars Golden Knights coverage begins with The Point, 6 Eastern on ESPN2. All right, first day coming up, top of the hour. Can the Celtics actually come back and win this series? Do the Lakers need a third star with LeBron and AD? It's Molly, it's Stephen A., it's JJ, it's the Mad Dog, coming up next. Sunday morning, the most famous race on the F1 circuit, all the glitz and glam of the Monaco Grand Prix. Pre-race coverage begins at 7:30 Eastern with Grand Prix Sunday. The race starts 9 a.m. Eastern on ABC and the ESPN app. Good fun to have the Dans back together again today.
I came back.
We'll see you tomorrow. First take.
Good to be back.